I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. I'm Bob Mackey.
I'm Henry Gilbert.
And this is a special intro we're doing for our live show at the California Academy of Sciences. If you couldn't make it, we're sorry, but we have it recorded for posterity. And 35 minutes of this is with the great comedian, writer, show creator, actor, Dana Gould. He's a Renaissance man.
Who also worked on The Simpsons from seasons 13 through 18, which we talked about. I don't know if we set that up entirely in the interview, but yes, yeah. This was a ton of fun. We recorded this on January 18th, 2018, and at a science museum of all places, and we had a really good time. If you want to hear all of the behind-the-scenes stuff, I guess we talked a ton about that on our community podcast, Talk to the Audience, on the Patreon.
Go back to last week's Talk to the Audience, and if you're listening to this way, way, way down the line, it's the January 2018 Talk to the Audience. You can hear, I don't know, 10 minutes of talk about how the event was set up, how we ran into Dana Gould, how he was very nice, and I think this is a great live show, our first, so you can hear all of us as I don't know, new fish in this dangerous world.
And SF Sketchfest was super awesome to have us there and to not only offer us a space on the show, but to set us up with Dana Gould as well. So super big thanks to FS Sketchfest, especially Cole Stratton and Janet Varney.
So yeah, please enjoy this live Talking Simpsons show. Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to the very first Talking Simpsons live show. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Hello. Yes. Thanks for coming. Yeah. I am your host, the very washed, basin fresh Bob Mackey. Who else is here with me today?
I may be hate-filled and ugly, but I'm Henry Gilbert. Hi.
And who else?
And Chris forgot to come up with something funny, Antista.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that one's going to stick.
In case you haven't heard our show before, who in this audience has not heard our show before? Mm. Oh, wow. We got a lot of newcomers.
That's
so in case you don't know us, we are Talking Simpsons. We are a chronological Simpsons podcast on the Laser Time Podcast Network. We've been doing this for 3 years. We do a podcast episode for every episode of The Simpsons. We're up to season 7 right now, and you can find us at TalkingSimpsons.com. And that's basically the sales pitch. Please subscribe. You came to us for what we do normally, but the bad news is we're not doing what we do normally, so the joke's on you.
Sorry.
We have a very special thing planned for this live show, and it's all about the most pathetic man in Springfield. And
that's right.
To help us out, we have a very non-pathetic guest, the great Dana Gould.
Dana Gould, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, Dana Gould.
So I believe Chris can give a brief biography on Dana here.
Yes. Hey, before we start out, congratulations on season 3 of Stand Against Evil.
Thank you very much.
That's where you clap, people. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
It's a non-Simpsons show with live actors on a ad-supported cable channel.
It did have one of my most laugh-out-loud moments with your character Kevin last year, because I was like,
Kevin is basically groundskeeper.
Not a spoiler, there's a moment where you can't speak and must pantomime. I'm like, this guy worked in cartoons. I forgot about that. You worked.
That was two of my favorite things is crying so hard that you can't make a noise, which is just. And the other one is crying, segueing into laughing, segueing back into crying. You're at a funeral with a friend, and somebody's like, I can't believe it. what are we doing here? Oh, God. Those are my favorite.
Well, that crying is very appropriate, Dana. We're here to talk about the most pathetic man in Springfield. Frankly, they're all pretty pathetic, but you were a Simpsons writer for several seasons, and you've probably written through several of those pathetic men.
Is it, I'm blanking on the name of the character. You'll have to forgive me. I was not prepared. Is it the Jack Lemmon?
Oh, Gil. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, Gil. Sorry. Yeah. Gil. I sent you to Phoenix to tame this town. Are we guessing who it is?
I mean, we each have our own pitch for who.
Okay.
It is.
Good. Yes. All right. Good.
I mean, we kind of ruled out Gil initially for being too pathetic because he would automatically win, but you definitely have him pegged.
It is the lingua franca of Gil.
Well, so you worked on the show seasons 13 to 19, right?
Like, 13 to 19 and 13 to 20.
What was it like? Like 13 was when Al Jean took back over on the show, right? Like, what was the feeling that season?
It was bloody warfare. No, okay. yeah, I came in. I was hired by Mike Scully and Mike and George Meyer were sort of running the rooms, and Mike went off to do a pilot for Robert Schimmel, and Al came in.
Oh, wow.
And Al took over the show. And I think the feeling on season 13 was probably the feeling on season 8, was probably the feeling on season 4, which is probably the feeling on season 27, which is, please don't let this be the season we screw it up.
Well, yeah, that must be an intense pressure coming on to something like The Simpsons, right?
Oh, it's horrifying. I liken it to use it's sort of an older reference, but if you've ever seen the movie Let It Be, the documentary of the worst Beatles album, there's a scene where they bring in Billy Preston to play with them, and he's like, okay, I'll just sit in with the Beatles, cool? And that's kind of your feeling, like, oh, all right.
Yeah, we actually interviewed Mike Scull, and he told us his experience was being the average guy in a room full of Harvard people who all knew each other. Was that a similar experience for you?
Yes, absolutely. And I did not go to Harvard. I went to UMass and dropped out, which I think endeared me to Scully because he lived near UMass. But there's a lot of that. A lot of people talking about their time on the Lampoon And I came from stand-up comedy, so I was just like a weird carny that had wandered into the room.
That's what I was sort of wondering is, like, you come from stand-up, and then you go work in animation, which is essentially a 9 to 10 month joke delivery system.
Was or that 12 month?
Was that difficult for you?
It was a big transition period in my life because I had just gotten married and I had just bought a house, and I had started to do stand-up comedy when I was 17. And I was 30, and I was like, great, I'll be an adult now. I'll have a job and a house and an office and a name tag. And that worked for a while, and then I went, I hate this. not the show. I never hated the show, but just like...
The routine, the 9 to 5?
Yeah, the 9 to 5. I like to do a lot of different things.
And you are right now, Jesus.
Yeah, I stay busy, but I learned how to write on the show, and it was a great time. It was a great time.
You were the first person I didn't know writers in Hollywood. You were the first person I knew who you were coming out of The Simpsons.
Yeah,
and it was the first time I was excited for the introduction of a writer.
Oh,
on
that's
The Simpsons.
Funny. No, I understand that, and people go, "Oh, I can totally hear your voice," and I'm like, "No, you can't." That's sort of like seeing a Viking ship go by. Like, I can really see Clem's rowing. No,
you don't think? Well, there's not one thing you'd put your like. That's a Dana Gould stamp on The Simpsons.
Yeah, but it was all stuff that was too gross to make the show.
I'd like to know what you pitched that maybe couldn't make a Simpsons episode.
Oh, I can tell you.
Please.
We're an R-rated podcast. Mm-hmm.
We opened at a book fair, and I had Dr. Nick looking at a copy of Our Bodies Ourselves. And he said, with shock and horror, that woman has a baby coming out of her abortion hole.
Oh, boy.
Whoa.
That's a little too spicy.
Up next, Living Single.
But made the script.
Wow.
So
wow.
It was at the table read then.
But the one thing that was good was in the first episode that I wrote, that was called Homer the Moe, is the first on-screen suicide.
I was going to ask about that. I swore that had to be you.
That was. George Meyer had a lot to do with that, too. Yeah, that was all George Meyer. But after the table read, Matt Groening walked up to me and said, 13 seasons without a suicide. Thanks a lot.
There were several more after that, I assume.
Yeah, then we really got into a jag. And that was one of the interesting things. You know, you'll get into jags of stuff, and one of the things that, you know, there was the jag for a while that, like, things would roll away, and whenever they would hit something, they would explode. Mm-hmm. And then we hit this jag of Homer chloroforming people. and we got a lot of mileage out of Homer chloroforming people. But at one point, Homer chloroformed Marge. I took it out of an argument or something. Yeah, and it aired. And Jim Brooks hit the roof.
Wow.
Like,
anybody bring any chloroform?
Yeah, he was not pleased with that. I mean, he seems to know what he's doing, so you have to defer.
Well, yeah, how much day-to-day is, like, Matt Groening and James L. Brooks, like, still involved, in, or at least in third year time there?
In my time there, I mean, it depends on whether or not Jim's making a movie. Mm-hmm. And if he's making a movie, he's off making a movie. And if he's not, he's down the hall. And he's absolutely still involved.
Wow.
Yeah. And Matt, too. Matt's around. Matt sits in the room and pitches funny stuff. And people just go, God, I met Matt Groening. He's such a nice guy. Yeah, he's a billionaire. Of course he's a nice guy.
Doesn't but he is.
He's I love Matt. He's a lovely guy.
What does it feel in the writer's room, like, compared to, I guess, other writer's rooms you've been in?
Well, it was my favorite. I run my room the way Mike Scully ran the room. And I'll just give you my theory is that nature abhors a vacuum. And if you say, all right, well, let's just work, and people don't know when they're finishing and they don't know what the goal is, they'll just kind of meander. And I usually, like, I had the first story room yesterday for season 3 of Stand Against Evil. Mm-hmm. And we met at 9:30. And I said, I really want to get at least a good head start on 6. I want to know what 6 episodes are. I already have 3. So we have 3 hours to come up with 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to get out of here by 4. Because we're over in Santa Monica, and I had to pick up my daughter from tennis, and it was like great, and we nailed it, and we left, you know. And I think if I just like, what do you want to do, we'd have been there all night. And I just don't think this is my own personal thing. I had a really great story with Mike Scully. We were in the room, and something happened, and we had to stay late. Mike was like, guys, I'm sorry. We have to stay late. I apologize.
It's at 9/11.
We have to finish this. It was I have a story about that, too.
His first episode was like a month after 9/11.
Yeah. Well, let me finish this story.
Sorry.
And then I'll tell you the hilarious 9/11 story.
Okay.
Yes.
But so everybody goes, call your wife or whatever. We'll order dinner, and we'll finish up. And then we all call our wives, we're going to be late. It's going to be a late night. Sorry. And then we all come in, and Mike goes, screw it. I told my kids I'd take them to see Chicken Run. just come in an hour early tomorrow. And we all went home at the normal time, and we all came in an hour early and the next day and nailed it, which is kind of, nice. You know, people like to go.
You promised me a 9/11 story.
I did, the 9/11 yes. story. So many jokes I'm not saying right now. But please appreciate them. Yeah, you know, 9/11 happened, and for people that were alive and old enough during that time, happened early in the morning, and nobody went to work. But some people, I guess, had already gone into the office, and we're like calling them, like, well, I'm not going in. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to get anything done today.
Yeah.
And we lived, my wife and I at the time, lived kind of halfway between, right in the center of town, behind the Chateau Marmont. And I said, well, you guys, if you want to just come over here. And just because people wanted to be together, you know, you didn't want to just be alone. I go, if anybody wants to come over here, just come over here. And everybody came over to my house. And then I turned to my wife, and it was like, you know, now it's like 11 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. The other tower fell. The world's at war. And I go, everybody's coming over. We don't have any food. So she goes, run to Ralph's. So I run to what's called Rock and Roll Ralph's on Sunset Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
They go in. It's 9/11 before noon. And it's like LA looks like the Omega Man. It's like streets are empty, the grocery store is empty, and I run in and buy a bunch of hot dogs and potato chips.
It's a 9/11 barbecue.
I'm checking out, I'm the only guy there. I'm checking out, and I don't know, the cashier just goes, oh, man, you're having a party. But not like, he didn't, it wasn't like, you're having a party. He was like, it's like, no one told him. He's like, no, oh, if no one's on the street, they must be at your house. It was the craziest thing. It was the craziest thing. And then we found out the next day the whole thing was a prank.
Well, how does writing for a comedy show change after something like that? Were certain things off limits? I noticed that there weren't very many jokes about George W. Bush in those years on the show.
No. People went... Some people on the staff had a very healthy attitude towards it. Some people went bananas and thought we were going to get bombed because we worked at Fox. And you forget, you know, that was... You know, in the days after that, people were sending anthrax around, and you really didn't... No one knew if that was a one-off or if it was stage one of a giant thing. I mean, it really was spooky time. I remember the day The Onion came out that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it was all about 9/11, and we were like, "Oh, okay, yeah, you can do it. You can be funny about it." And then SNL came back on. And we started to move forward.
Right, because everybody changed their theme song for like three weeks.
Yeah, it was just showing flags and sad eagles. And I remember, yeah, I mean, it was a different time, and we all went on to hate George Bush again. But yeah, the immediate aftermath of it was really crazy, and because you just didn't know how far this endeavor was going. We didn't know that they were like, did you see that? You know, they didn't plan on that happening either.
How do you always bring it back to 9/11?
Yeah, that was not
every single time.
Let's talk about something less depressing. Mm-hmm. Moe Szyslak.
I know what the ladies like. That's why.
Well, yeah, isn't Moe one of your favorite guys to write?
Moe's my favorite character, hands down. My dad was a bartender when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
The first episode I wrote was... Home of the Moe, and that's about the bar that my dad ran. My dad ran the Nip Muck Rod and Gun Club, and it was a private bar. You need a membership, but because you had a membership, it could stay open on Sunday, which you couldn't in Massachusetts in the 70s because of what were called blue laws. Mm-hmm. It was a religious thing. But because it was a private club, you could go there. And the design of the bar in the show is the... basically mirrors what my dad had. And then the other part of it was Mo turns the bar into a very upscale shishi restaurant called M, which was based on my experience of being at the W Hotel in New York and being in the men's room and not realizing I was in the men's room. I just walked into this room and there was like a waterfall against one side of the wall and nothing else. But the door said men, and I'm looking at it, and within a five-second interval, a guy walked out of the wall, and somebody started pissing on the waterfall. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess this is the best. But it was dare I say it, an orgasm of form over function. And that's where, like, the rabbits hanging in harnesses came from and the giant video of the eyeball. And the doorman for M, Cecil... Mm-hmm. With the long hair and the beard, is my friend who was then completely anonymous, he's somewhat famous, my friend Greg Nicotero, mm-hmm. who's now the executive producer of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
But at the time, he was just my friend Greg with long hair. And so if you ever watch Home with the Moe, Greg is the doorman for M. He's Cecil.
I think you also had your brother on one of the commentaries.
Yeah, my brother was. My brother Kevin, whom I'm named after in Stand Against Evil. Okay. Yeah, my brother was visiting, and I had to go do a commentary, and he came with me, and it was Matt. He was like, Kevin, sit in.
Wow. What's it like doing a commentary on this thing? You seem like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a blast. It's just like this. It's just like this. It's just watching it and. You know, the best commentary...
Underneath a globe stage. Yeah, yes.
Well, this is very Dr. Strange. In San Francisco. Very Dr. Strange Lovian. But it's the best commentaries are when you just get sidetracked. And like I think it's the commentary for John Carpenter's The Thing. And it's just John and Kurt Russell, and they're old buddies, and they go back. And you go like, Kevin, I think Kevin built that. Yeah, is he still married to Shelley? No, did you hear about Shelley? Oh, her sister got real sick and she moved. Oh, that's terrible. And you just, I love that. And you just say, oh, they're just guys that have friends and talk. It's great.
Oh, well, you did make a very permanent addition to the show, very biographical addition.
I did, yeah. Ling Bouvier is my daughter, Lulu. And it was one of those things where I was trying to come up with a idea for an episode. My ideas always start off in the toilet. You know, what if Homer finds a hat? You know, it's always, haunted key fob. And then Matt Groening said, well, why don't you write about, you know, going to China and adopting a baby, which I had just done. Like, oh, yeah, I can do that easy. And I did, and it's all based on my wife's and my experience of going to China for the first of what would become three times. And Ling Bouvier is my daughter. Her photo was the design. And it's based very loosely on our experiences in China. And Ling is now a recurring character on the show. She shows up now and again. And that girl is now 15 and is really funny. A great sense of humor, is really sharp. And she was watching The Simpsons, and she was on, and I went, oh, honey, that's you. And she goes, yeah. Like, no, that's you. That's Ling. That's the character that I wrote about you, and that's your baby picture. And she just goes, yeah, I like Bob's Burgers more. didn't even look at me. She's like, yeah, I like Bob. I took a picture of the albino alligator and texted it to her, and I went, honey, look, an albino alligator. I saw it last year.
Right. It sounds like she posts on Simpsons forums.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That was another question I love asking Simpsons writers. We talked to a lot of earlier guys, but you're around with the existence of the internet, like,
yes,
full force.
Yes.
Was that difficult working on a show that kind of dynasty?
I don't give a... People really paid a lot of attention to it.
In the writing room?
Yes. I differ from a lot of that opinion, and this will be sort of airy-fairy, but, like... I believe it is I don't consider myself an artist. I consider myself a craftsperson. But
look at your badge.
It is the... Exactly.
It's artist on it.
How could I not be an artist? It's laminated. I was like, I believe it is it's your duty as a creative person to not let the audience create your piece. That you create what you believe in and you show it to them, and it's theirs to like or not like. The death of the Star Trek franchise before the J.J. Abrams thing, all the next-gen movies, was because the audience had these rules. This has to happen, and this has to happen, and then Data does this, and that does... And it became kabuki theater, and they start to dictate what they want. And I believe that you have to challenge them and constantly surprise them. And the other thing that you found out is, like, you read these... The No Homers site was dictating all this stuff.
Oh.
And then you found out, it's 23 people in Wales. You know, it was 23 13-year-old people in Wales that were dictating everything. It was driving everybody...
Wow.
I don't think you should read that stuff.
Danny,
well, I think unfortunately we have...
Do you have a candidate for the most pathetic Springfield male?
Outside of Gil, I would have to give it to Homer. I misspoke. I was going to say Homer. I have to give it to Mo, but
yeah.
Homer the Mo. I was just saying Homer the Mo. I would have to give it to Mo, and I would cite something that I wrote. It's not in one of my scripts, but it's something I wrote. It's the image of Mo that will always live with me. It's a man sitting alone in a bar, drawing a wang on Marmaduke. And then cutting it out and putting it in a cardboard box and putting the cardboard box away, waiting for the next day's paper when you draw another wang on Marmaduke, cut it out and put it in the box. And then someday somebody finding a cardboard box full of Marmaduke cartoons.
That took a turn.
Where he's genetically accurate.
Awesome. Please give a round of applause for Dana Gould. He's great.
On that note,
thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much, Dana.
Like most 9/11 reveries, it ended in a man drawing a wang on Marmaduke.
thank you so much.
Thanks, Dana.
Appreciate
it, man.
Thank you so much.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
All right,
Now, wow. Dana is gone. What a great guest, everybody. So yes, such a great guest. So
we were all very lucky to see this.
Yes. So now we're going to get into the meat of our main topic. We actually didn't know we'd have Dana for this long, which is great. So we got to ask a lot of great questions. But we're here still to determine the most pathetic man in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And we should just get into it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Oh, go ahead.
We're not qualified pathetic men.
No,
by the way.
No,
we're
all
on
of you
podcast?
Judging us.
Yeah, we podcast about the Simpsons. We are not
pathetic.
Podcast
about the Simpsons. I have a really cool vape pen. Not pathetic.
That's
in
true.
Any way.
He was asked to put it away earlier.
I know. What the hell, man?
That never happened.
Sir, this is a museum.
We all separately chose our own pathetic male for the Simpsons, and we're going to let you guys vote in a very unscientific way in this very scientific building. So,
but we discounted certain people, didn't we?
That's right. That's right. So. So Dana immediately chose Gil, but he is discounted because Gil is too pathetic. He is the ringer.
It's his job to be pathetic.
Yeah, I mean, he came into being as a very pathetic creature. But
I mean, like Dana said, he was invented to be Jack Lemmon from Glengarry Gil and Ross.
I just need the Glengarry leads. Give me the what? No one's seen that. Also, Diana, where's the laughter? Jesus.
Homer, of course, if you watch the episode Homer's Enemy, Grimy. He gives a good argument as to why Homer is not a failure. He lives in a mansion. He eats lobsters.
Right.
His son owns a factory, for Christ's sake. I mean, Homer has got it made. And he makes $5 an hour.
Anybody out there married with children who owns a home? Not in this fucking city. Stop it, Matt. Put it down.
Boo.
Put it down.
Also, so Wiggum, he can legally murder people, so we don't want to throw him under the bus.
Yeah.
He's the chief.
He has some pride in his work, too. And same like comic book guy, he's too detestable. I mean, he's too shitty. He's in too full of himself too. I'd say that he's not pathetic enough. Even though his catchphrase is "I wasted my life,"
he has a lot of pride for being so pathetic.
Though Otto's catchphrase is also "I've wasted my life."
He wasted it in different
ways.
More
accurate.
Yes.
Yeah. So now that we've cleared the air, we put some of these characters off the table, I will tell you my pick, which I believe will win. And that is Seymour Skinner as the most pathetic man in Springfield. Eater of individual fruit cocktail cups, wearer of armor hot dogs, an overseer of unforgettable luncheons, and a big, big fan of dioramas. It's better than hearing Test Thursday. You heard it from him.
Wow. You were right to pick him.
I'll tell you why I chose Skinner. Well, he has a very specific kind of patheticness. He was a virgin for a long time up until season 8. He's very lonely and lives with his aggressive mother. And there are just so many reasons. Of course, he was a veteran, but he was a veteran of an unpopular war. So,
boo, Vietnam.
Go back to Vietnam.
Yeah.
Okay. And as we all have seen from the show, he is some sort of non-giving up school guy. He loves school. Automatically makes him lame as hell.
Yeah. He also, he would not be invited to the veterans of popular wars in Springfield that Grandpa gets to go
not
to.
Not very
exactly,
popular.
Yeah. He gets the bad memorial. So, last thing I have as to why he's pathetic, he is actually an imposter, but we can't talk about that under penalty of torture, so we won't even bring up Armin Tamzarian. That'll be the last you hear of him during this live show. But I will go over Skinner's 5 lowest moments to convince all of you that Skinner is the most pathetic creature on The Simpsons.
You will get a vote.
And you guys are all going to vote informally. So, number 5, these are all in order from least pathetic to most pathetic. Number 5, I have shot in the back by his own troops during a Bob Hope show. He was trying to get Joey Heatherton to put on some pants, and one of his own men shot him in the back. I imagine they did not release that USO show to the public.
Yeah, and it was right after they took a photo. They took a photo with him and then shot him in the back.
That's the best way to do it. But so this should be number 1, but we don't see it. This is only told to Bart, so we don't actually see this flashback. So that's why it is number 5. Number 4 I have, so I chose all of my instances from the shows we've done so far. So we just hit season 7. There are more pathetic moments after, but these are all fresh in my mind. Number 4 is the inflatable bath pillow incident, which landed Skinner on Springfield's version of Cops. And it did come up again in an episode we recently recorded where Skinner's mother was in a child care class because, again, fighting over an inflatable bath pillow. It's all a matter of pride for Skinner. He won't send it back to Taiwan for repairs. He won't spend, I don't know, $8 for a new one.
He has no money to buy that new one. Just like he has no money to buy a new pair of underwear if he's stolen.
It was his last pair.
A $3 household Walgreens item is tearing his family apart.
Yes. It's impossible.
He could easily fix this.
Yes, so that is number 4. And again, Skinner was shamed on Cops. His face was blurred at the last minute, so.
Blur my face.
Yes. Also, number 3, I have this could be up higher, but I think Big Butt Skinner deserves to be number 3. In case you forget it from the episode Bart's Comet, this is where Bart makes a weather balloon, looks like Skinner, with his naturally big ass. And he's wearing a sign that says, "Hi, I'm Big Butt Skinner." And this floats around town, humiliating him until he is humiliated even further by Bart discovering Skinner's comet. So that's number three. What do you guys think about this?
No!
Also, the president says school is for losers.
Yeah, I know. He can't take it.
When a four-year-old has turned your ass into a celestial object, you're a fucking loser.
It really is low. Number two, I have getting fired in front of the entire school in Sweet Seymour Skinner's badass song, of course. It was not his fault. But that was a very shameful moment for Skinner. And we see the one-time quirk of his where he hiccups when he's anxious. I wish they would have kept that. I don't know why they did.
That was after he was accidentally anti-Semitic, I believe
right.
And
Yom Kippur.
I mean,
it sounds made up.
It sounds so made up. Yom Kippur. When Chalmers shamed him for the children being ugly. Like
ugly
room
children.
After room of ugly, ugly children.
I mean, it's not the children's
fault.
I
hardly think it's the children's fault.
So number one, and I am totally rigging this, number one I have is steamed hams. So who's a fan of steamed hams in the room?
Yeah.
It is now the meme that will never get old, I swear to God, on my own life. I will never get sick of seeing a new version of steamed hams. And this version is three guys explaining steamed hams to you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So of course...
Yes.
This is one of the greatest 2 minutes of written comedy ever on television. Yeah. Skinner invites Superintendent Chalmers over to his house for an unforgettable luncheon, and basically
arguably the lamest term of all time for a regular lunch.
Yes,
it's lunch
for a quiet lunch in your mother's house. So we see. I mean, you guys all are familiar with it. His roast is
never
burning. He has to go across the street to Krusty Burger, and through a series of lies, his house catches on fire. And possibly his mother is seriously injured by smoke inhalation.
And again, completely unbelievable. Like, Chalmers is not fooled at all once.
I think Skinner gets a brief bit of respect that he is an odd fellow, but he steams a good ham. But his tens of thousands of dollars of damage were done to his house. And
yes.
I mean, there's no real going back from
that. And I'd say that's also pretty pathetic. That's his greatest triumph, that he fooled Chalmers into thinking that those were steamed hams.
By sacrificing several rooms
that's
of his house.
That's true. Nothing gets by Chalmers.
Yeah.
And somehow Skinner won.
Yes. Yeah.
He may have lost his mother in a house.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the Northern Lights.
Before I wrap this up, I do want to ask you guys, what is your favorite steamed hams meme? Mine is Metal Gear Solid, but steamed hams, where you get the codec conversations, you get the sound of a disc spinning, you get the alert signals, you get the little radar in the top of the screen. Look this up, not
it's
now.
Really good.
Look this up when you get home. It's amazing.
My favorite, I think, was the one I just saw today, so it's most in my memory, that every time a door opens, another Chalmers walks into the house. So it follows the order of the sketch, except a new Chalmers walks into the house.
I believe it's called steam hams only every time something the reality is contorted.
Yes, yeah.
And there you end up with like 16 Chalmers. Mine is a really good one where it's Pulp Fiction. Like, really, Skinner, these burgers just take like Big Kahuna Burger. And then Skinner's ends up being murdered at the end of this. It's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful. Pulp Fiction steamed hams. It's impossible not to Google.
So this concludes the us explaining memes portion of the show.
Did that go well? Did that go well? At a science museum, a stuffed ostrich right behind us, and we're explaining shit posts.
We're showing how we ruin our brains.
Memes are scientific.
This is a Metal Gear Solid 2. I mean, very scientific game.
Well, all right. So mine, actually, I already have Danny Gould's backup on this.
Oh,
that
come
Mo
on.
Is.
That's low. That's low.
I wrote this before, though. So
he did,
this was my pick before Danny Gould voted. But yes, I'd say Mo is the most pathetic man in Springfield for several reasons. Like, mainly that he is, in every scene he is in, he is the rock bottom of the scene. Like, they set up the, like, well, who's the worst guy in this group? Who will make the joke that a man has a rope belt in the car when they're talking about their girlfriends, which he doesn't have. He has a woman he's stalking. That's Mo. Like, that's it. And Mo is either in his late 30s or early 60s, depending on different jokes in the show.
It's mid-90s, according to the little rascal he murdered.
Yeah, so that's also... okay, so Mo Sizlek, a.k.a. Momar, a.k.a. Kid Gruesome, a.k.a. Kid Mo, He's a cruel man who pushes everyone away from him. The only time he got to have a girlfriend on the show was when they wrote in Hank Azaria's real-life girlfriend, Helen Hunt, to be his girlfriend on the show.
Oh, they were so happy together.
I know.
So happy.
I'm disappointed on that commentary. They never talk about how they're divorced now. Like, they're just like, no, not going to talk about
it. I think it was recently fresh.
That would be the place to air it, yeah.
But yes, Mo murdered the original Alfalfa, which they just kind of let fly by. He beats his head into the ground until he is dead for stealing his bit.
Stole his bit.
Yeah, stole my bit.
That's better than the actual death of Alfalfa.
Yes. You should have done the same thing for me for mentioning that too early.
And as Dana said, Mo was also party to the first suicide on The Simpsons, watching his teacher walk into the water and drown. And also, yes, that Mo has committed many crimes in Springfield, too. He's usually, if it's not Snake, then the crime is committed by Mo, usually.
It's too lowly to be touched by Fat Tony.
Yes.
Like smuggling pandas and carrying a whale.
Carrying a whale, smuggling pandas and whales. He serves liquor without a license. He runs a Russian roulette game in his back office run by Vietnamese men. He attempted to murder Jimbo Jones and then just walked away after breaking into the Simpsons' house, by the way. He robbed Homer at gunpoint by pointing a shotgun in his head and saying, like, I rob people now. And he also once kidnapped David Byrne and forced him to write a song about how nobody likes Mo. That's the song he writes. Like, And he has said multiple times he is a registered sex offender as well. And also, like, that even when he's happy, even when he is doing charitable things, he actually hates it when people found out that he was reading books to sick children. He threatened to kill Ned for daring to talk about it. Like, so he can't even be happy with that.
As a positive, he does have two knives.
And also, he invented the Flaming Mo and just stole it from Homer and only was going to give it to him after, basically, he was going to get the most rich from it. So he is always the bottom of the place. Also, he only got darker as it went on, as I feel Dana has confirmed for me, but this was my theory beforehand. I think the writers think he is the most pathetic as well and will give every horrible thing to Mo that they can.
Having your head in an oven with a sign that says no funeral taped to your back in the Christmas special.
That is the best Mo joke.
Yeah, so that is... So my five set is Mo-ments.
I burned it off.
Yes, no, well, I'll go with that one first. So there's almost too many Mo suicide attempts to list, but the darkest one is in the season 11 Christmas episode Grift of the Magi. Just the image of Mo with his head in an oven and taped to his back is a note that says no funeral. No,
it's okay. He joins the Simpsons for dinner later.
He replaces
my
his
life
head
and
with
death
a,
never happened.
I'd like to think that he
with a fat Christmas goose.
I'd like to think that he couldn't afford gas.
To kill himself. They shut off his gas, and he couldn't. It's just the image of no funeral.
Throw him in a ditch.
Oh, that's pretty dark.
Let the crows figure it out.
Number two in the two Miss Nosopy Papadalons, it begins with a bachelor auction that establishes that Apu is the most popular bachelor after every other man in Springfield is seemed to be ineligible and no one wants to date them. But the rock bottom of that group was Mo, who when he walks across the stage, he does not stop walking and the music does not stop and he immediately goes to the reject section. Like, that is how low he is. Even among the joke where every guy in town is a loser, everyone hates Mo the most. All right. So number three, in Burns' Air, Mo says like he's pretending to be Travis Bickle, which is already a very dark, sad, pathetic thing to do. He is doing the classic "You talking to me?" and moving his hand toward a mirror. Then the gun flies off, smashes the mirror, and which was an antique. So even when he is fantasizing about being a troubled loner, it fails, and he can't fantasize about being Travis Bickle. It destroys an antique mirror.
You could be Travis Bickle with $20 and a trip to any Army-Navy store. Like, it is not that hard, and Mo still fucked it up.
Very easy cosplay.
Number two, the second to last one, Lisa on Ice. Mo is about to lose his thumbs from a gambling debt, but not just any gambling debt, to a children's hockey game. Like, to a children's hockey game, he has gambled so much that he might lose.
Take my thumbs.
I wonder if they. I wonder if that bet was just nullified by the tie that happened at the end.
I
of the
wonder.
Episode.
We you know you can bet on a tie. You can't bet That's it's true. Going to tie. Maybe nobody won. And well, Mo obviously kept his thumbs though. So All right. And then lastly, Mo's most pathetic defeated moment in Simpsons history is one of my favorite moments in Simpsons history ever. It is in Who Shot Mr. Burns Part 2. He is taking a lie detector test. He is told that he has to say he has a hot
you
date
know the
tonight.
Scene.
No, a date. All right, dinner with friends.
Dinner with friends.
Dinner with alone. Watching TV alone.
TV alone.
Okay, all right. I'm going to ogle ladies in the Victoria's Secret catalog. And then that is proven to be lies like Sears catalog. And no time has Sears catalog sounded more sad or pathetic.
I do like the tag of he's still in the chair and he says, "I don't deserve this kind of shabby treatment," and it's proved to be a lie. Yes. Like even he secretly believes he deserves that.
His body rejects him and thinks he deserves this.
A
shabby
disproven
treatment.
Machine believes he deserves this.
Boy,
so yes.
Now I think I chose it poorly. But.
Dana Gould and myself agree. Most pathetic. Most is.
I think that's a low blow to use someone like Dana Gould to champion your most pathetic person in Springfield. But I can do you one better.
Oh,
he's Mo adjacent
because I, like, oh, Bonnie, like Barney Gumble, already a ripoff of the idiotic Barney Rubble, but like the line, oh, Barney from Mo in the brothel episode when he has to remember, oh, I'm the only one who cares about this fucking guy. This is a single alcoholic, pathetic 40-year-old drunk who has done every single bad job in Springfield, even if it includes, you know, the most method behavior ever, wearing a diaper with no underwear that flies off in the wind right before you see your mother, which also suggests he's never left his hometown.
Tell him Big Baby sent you.
Yeah. This can't get any worse.
He does say come back diaper.
No,
which makes the situation much worse.
And because, like, it's why we disqualified Homer, because from the very beginning, from the first show, We have to be given somebody who is less pathetic than Homer, and that's Barney, or like more pathetic than Homer, because that's Barney. You need to root for Homer. Yes, he's an awful, slovenly drunk, but he's not single. He owns a home and he's got a good job. Whereas Barney has been an amateur crusty, or and I forget what the other ones were.
Well, he was the governor, or he was, well, he was not the town drunk in Colonial Springfield. He was, I'm supposed to be the governor.
That's right. And he also played Bart on Bart Chat when Bart got famous.
Yeah.
So the worst possible job, clearly the guy has no benefits, even less than a crowdfunded podcaster. And
I've got a better apartment than that.
And in his apartment, my God, I don't know if you have ever seen anybody who has a an end table that's a fucking cable spool, like that, like the definition of a loser. But here's where it really bothers me, because Barney on several occasions has shown aptitude, and who doesn't hate wasted potential? Barney can sing. Barney can direct a film. Don't cry for me, I'm up. You know which one that is. He can direct a film. He's an adept astronaut for some reason. and we see in the flashback episode that he was preparing for his SATs.
Harvard, here I come. Harvard, here I come.
Yeah. A much higher voice with no exposed teeth.
Yes.
Like until Homer gave him a beard. You know what a fucking loser you have to be if Homer Simpson dictates the course of your life on a regular basis?
Yeah.
The only time Barney has succeeded in any way is by following Homer's cues. He's had one successful business by buying a bigger plow. Simpler times. Simpler times.
By ripping. I will say he was friends with
Linda Ronstadt.
He's friends with Linda Ronstadt.
One of two women we see him with in 30 years.
He has potential and squandered it on the Springfield equivalent of fucking Miller High Life. It's infuriating. It's infuriating. And what's even worse of all, like the way I tried to phrase it was that, like, not only does Barney have no willpower, he has no will. Or, like, will to live.
If you didn't close the bar, I'd never leave.
Yeah. Yes. And not only that, if he wanted to, he can't even die. He can't even die. He can be exploded, be involved in jetpack incidents, have his head slammed in a car door. He is not even allowed the merciful embrace of sweet death to escape this mortal coil. He is stuck here forever to do nothing.
Secret talent, though, he makes really great omelets.
Big-ass omelets.
Yeah.
And, of course, most of all, established in the first episode of The Simpsons, he dates a girl named Diarrhea. That's disgusting.
That is Chris headcanon.
No, it is not Daria. I would have heard Daria. It's Diarrhea. Let's roll Diarrhea.
I'd also say that he has drunk beer out of an ashtray.
That's true.
Someone spilled beer in this ashtray.
He sucked it from an empty keg until his gums have bled from the effort.
Yes. Out of his gums pretty bad.
And I'm not... I don't mean to disparage Barney. I am Barney. We're all Barney. Like...
Well, you don't suck quarters out of a love tester machine.
It's only 9 o'clock.
I think another sad thing about Barney is he's covered in ears. He has he has grown extra ears from his multiple experiments.
If it's a shitty job, Barney will do it.
And because of Barney, Mo had to create a new job in which you have to guard the beer delivery truck or else Barney will drink it all.
Yes, yes.
Smithers almost had the Barney guarding job.
Which was the lowest point for Smithers in that episode, and yet he was so far above Barney in that moment.
It's true.
That it was established that if Barney doesn't drink, he becomes a fit astronaut.
Yes.
That's what he becomes.
He becomes an excellent human being. And I've tried to stop drinking. That doesn't happen that easily.
That's how much Barney excels. I think Barney does have the arc of becoming... But also then falling off the wagon.
In any other fucking town, Barney would be the most celebrated human being in the universe. But because of his affinity for Homer Simpson, who has somehow been allowed to dictate the course of his life through one beer. It's sad. It's not I think that and sad is kind of that's pathetic, right?
It's quite pathetic.
Pathetic.
The gods of the Simpsons universe, and by that I mean the writers, they decided Barney cannot improve. They made him sober briefly, but they're like, nah, he's not funny.
And that's if you're a big fan of the Simpsons, that's how little Barney matters to the world of Springfield and the Simpsons. He's the only one allowed to have an entire thing change about him, and nobody cared. Because they changed it back and nobody cared either.
Yeah, well, originally, this was in our interview with Mike Scully. He said that originally in the script he was just going to fall back off the wagon, but he said that just was too dark. They're like, no, we can't do that with him there. But, he is below Mo. But
yes, exactly. He's subservient to Mo. Mo is this guy's gatekeeper. So he has to be more pathetic than Mo.
He's the only one of our selections that doesn't have a job either.
He has... In that he has numerous jobs, fly by night.
Yeah.
If you can juggle a sign, Barney will do it.
They're very under the table, you're right.
No offense to sign jugglers out there. I can see a lot of you very upset about that.
That's actually how you knew sign juggling was sad on Rick and Morty, because that was what Jerry was watching a guide to become one to apply to be a sign spinner in one episode.
So we're going to wrap up here. I think we should have our audience vote. I don't know if we can hear.
How about the applause-o-meter?
The applause-o-meter. Yeah. Okay, so...
do I have to do the thing with my arm?
Let's have Chris judge the applause-o-meter. Yes. He can be the impartial judge, but you can't choose your own person.
Okay.
Automatically.
Oh, I won't do that.
If you want Skinner to be the most pathetic, please make noise.
Quiet, JoJo. Okay.
Let's... How about let's give
it
up?
Are we here for Mo?
It's a little higher. A little higher.
Okay. God.
And finally, Barney Gumble.
No one! Fucking no one! Are you kidding me?
One guy.
Oh, my God. Okay, look. I think that wins the pathetic battle.
Oh,
he didn't get a vote. And it was free.
He's not even popular.
Chris may have a point. He is too pathetic to be found to be the most pathetic.
From you
not
people.
Even, he got one vote.
And I get it. You don't like me. This is not about Barney.
Boy, I think Barney should be... I kind of sold on that one vote.
I agree with that argument.
Yeah, that should have hurt for everybody listening. I thought I made a compelling case.
You did.
Thanks everybody.
Barney, officially the most pathetic man.
As of now, we have decided it is now official.
Talking Simpsons stamp of approval.
Email Matt Groening tomorrow.
Oh my God!
Blocked again. So thanks for coming, everybody.
Thank you.
In case you don't remember, we are Talking Simpsons. TalkingSimpsons.com every Wednesday on the LaserTime Podcast Network. We go through the entire show in order. We're at the very beginning of Season 7, and it's so great and so much fun. Any other things you guys want to talk about?
No, I mean, we got 120 episodes on there you can give a listen to. We also did one about The Critic, but that's only on our Patreon at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. But yes, we are part of the LaserTime Podcast Network with this big lug over here.
Hi.
Yeah.
Chris,
yeah.
You won.
Are we doing plugs here? No, this, yes, thank you, yeah, for coming out. We've never done a live show before. This is really interesting to do.
Yes,
so
thank you very much.
Thank you. You've been a great audience.
Our first live show. Thank you very much.
Totally.
All right, well, and thank you, Sketchfest, for having
us
out here, too.
Thank
yes.
And thanks to Dana Gould,
yes,
wherever you are.
Yes,
for real.
Thank you so much.
Right. Watch Stand Against Evil. It's great.
Yes, oh, yes, Stand Against Evil.
All right, have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you.
Infotainment.